Welcome home. We are WNST, AM 1570, Towson, Baltimore. We are Baltimore positively watching the sun come up over Camden Yards after a three-game sweep in chilly South Chicago. You know, ever since I put that Aparicio 59 throwback on, the Orioles are undefeated on the south side in front of the very chilly Louis Aparicio statue out in left center field under the scoreboard when the wind's blowing in under there. And, there are plenty of good seats available from what I saw. And really, Luke, a rocky period. And I want to give some love to Farmer. Farmer, read it off of your shirt. Because I see, this is where I knew I was going to trip. The comfort guys, that's why they tell me to do that.
You get tripped up. It's Farnan and
Farnan
Dermer,
and Dermer.
right?
Here's the
You want to say,
problem. I
you
knew.
everyone's so used to saying Farmer, right? So like he, so I think that's what trips
And
everyone up.
Mark Farn. Nin from the Grand Funk Railroad. And then
There
there
you
was
go.
Mark Ferner, who was a defenseman for the Baltimore Skipjacks. I'm not making this up. You can Google this. I mean, I knew Mark Ferner. So I, the Dermot, I'm fine with the backside of it. I had Zach out here last week when we had a plumbing job, but they do HVAC and AC, and they're our friends, and we appreciate them sponsoring all of our sports reports, all the stuff up in the audio vault. And, you know, now that the Orioles have won three in a row, I get to get back on the bandwagon, even though I was never really off the bandwagon. I know they're capable of playing better baseball. I picked them at 92 wins. I'm going to continue to remind that over under as to whether they can get there or not. But signs of life happen when you find someone in the bullpen you think could do the job, even when they stumble. And when you start to peel back Gunnar Henderson and what he is and what Pete Alonso represents. Dude, it's April 10th, man. You know, the Giants are in town. The weather's going to break this week. The Eflin injury, the bad spots of the no Kittredges and wherever the Tyler Wells's are and wherever the Keegan Aikens are and wherever Jackson Holliday may be and when Jordan Westberg falls out of the sky. Like, all of those are supposed to be big contributors to this effort, and they haven't picked up a toothpick yet. So for me, balancing it at 500 and being able to come back from that sucker punch they took from Pittsburgh, especially on Saturday, and answer, you know, okay. I mean, manager got thrown out, lit a fire under their ass all of a sudden, you know, whatever you want to use in the baseball thing, they're alive, they're okay, they weathered a little storm, they're coming home to better weather, and you know, let's pick it up, boys, is what I would say.
Yeah, I mean, a reminder that they're second place in the AL East going into the off day, and then of course coming home now to start their second homestand of the season. And there are only three teams in the American League right now that even have a winning record. It's really no one other than the Yankees. You know, Cleveland's 8-5, Texas is 7-5, but there's no one other than the Yankees that really has looked good in the AL. Entirely, right? I mean, you kind of look at the run differentials and all those kinds of kind of beneath the surface statistics to kind of see where teams are, and you're seeing a lot of, frankly, what the Orioles have been, a lot of inconsistency. I mean, I'm not going to sit here and say that the Orioles played great baseball in Chicago. They played well enough. They
To beat a
played better
bad
than the
team.
Chicago than the White
Yeah.
Sox. And by the way, I'm okay with that for right now,
I
right?
like it a lot.
I mean, I'll say this. I mean, they won three games in Chicago, and who exactly is swinging the bat well right now? I see two guys that are very clearly swinging the bat well. Taylor Ward, who's been fantastic and has nine doubles already, and Gunnar Henderson, who accounts for half the team's homers at this point in time. So, you have a couple others that have been okay. Like Rutschman's been okay, but he hasn't been great. Pete Alonso's still not hitting, right? I mean, go down the list. I mean, members of the young core that we've talked about, Couser and Mayo, I mean, are not hitting at all.
And having
So,
really dreadful at bats. They're striking out a lot.
sure.
They're leaving runners on. I mean, 13 runners left on. They won by the, you know, seat of their pants. And it's freezing out there. And they're moving the game times around.
Yeah.
And, you know, everything's upside down. And you get there, you're blowing on your hands. And I mean, I couldn't believe people sat in it on Tuesday. In the ninth inning, the woman who had the mask up and
Yeah.
the same six White Sox fans there wearing Ron Kittle jerseys or whatever the hell was going on. Like, I'm watching it because Luke, it doesn't mean anything to you, and it maybe doesn't even mean anything to my audience, except that I've experienced this stuff. So I worked in Chicago at the turn of the century. I was nationally syndicated. My kid was of that. He was 14, 15 years old. I brought him out on a road trip when the Orioles played in Comiskey on a Tuesday night, sort of Albert Bell era. I mean, this is 99, 2000. And dude, it was so cold. There were 3,500 people there, which felt like nobody then. Now I see games that look like there's less than 1,000. They look like Hagerstown games or whatever. I mean, literally, because they just don't care. They're making it for television. They don't care. They don't care about they. If you're saying they care about the fans and moving the game from 7 o'clock to 2 o'clock, then they really don't care if anybody shows up. And then when people show up, I feel sorry for them. You know what I mean? I felt sorry for Rob Long and his little hoodie down in the dugout. Like, it's cold, man, and playing baseball in it is not natural. Not anymore natural seeing these kids run around with the lacrosse sticks when it's 28 degrees around here. But I mean, and I didn't play lacrosse, but I played baseball. It's not baseball weather, and it's just not going to be good. As my dad would say, Cuellar needs more heat to pitch.
Right. So, I mean, it is what it is, right? I
But they
mean,
won three, and
he
you can't
won.
do
And
better than
I was just
that.
going to say, I mean, they
Yeah.
won three. Was the eyeball test impressive? No, not really. I mean, I have to say this since you mentioned Tuesday. Anyone who watched that game through the first 4 or 5 innings, and I'm not talking Orioles baseball, I'm not talking White Sox baseball here. Those first 4 or 5 innings, that's some of the worst Major League Baseball I've ever watched. The first 11 Orioles batters, six strikeouts, four walks, and a hit by pitch. I mean, there wasn't a ball put in play over those first 11 batters. And that's not to say it was good pitching, because I mean, the White Sox starter, who by the way was optioned to the minors after that game on Tuesday, I mean, we talk a lot about the three true outcomes in baseball. I mean, that was the two outcomes because you weren't getting any home runs even. So, but they found a way. And the thing that I will say, and I will take some optimism away, they pitched pretty well in this series. And again, it's the White Sox, right? I'm not going to sit here and act like the White Sox are anything to puff your chest out over as far as being able to beat them three straight. But they pitched well. A little shaky with Ryan Helsley, right? I mean, Rico Garcia walked two guys in the ninth inning on Wednesday
Well, they're showing a
afternoon,
lot of
but
confidence in him, right? I mean,
well, Garcia's been their best.
he's a
He's been their
good
best.
story. Yeah.
He's been really good. I mean, they'd be in a lot of, they'd be in a bad spot right now where you're saying, how are you getting to Ryan Helsley consistently? And, Helsley hasn't had clean innings, but overall, I'm not overly concerned with him. But, Tyler Wells got off to a shaky start. He's pitched better since then. Grant Wolfram's had some really good outings. They need him because, I mean, their other lefties, Keegan Aiken and Dietrich Enns, are on the IL, right? So you're needing to count on some other guys that in some leverage situations that frankly just haven't done it or haven't done it to a degree where it inspires a lot of confidence, but they're making it work. I mean, Anthony Nunez pitched the eighth inning on Wednesday
Well, we
afternoon.
knew it was going to be this when they came north.
Sure. That part I haven't been surprised by at all.
They didn't have a stable of proven relief pitchers. And I don't even know what proven is. I mean, I see Sir Anthony warming up in the bullpen in Chicago, and I'm thinking, like, I don't know, if that was my closer, I wouldn't, I sleep better with Helsley. And in a general sense, this is where Elias is the smartest guy in the room and pisses off Lockenfohrer and anybody that wants to hate on him is, he thinks himself as a pitcher. He thinks himself as a pitching guy. I thinks himself as a budget guy in getting better value and being smarter than the next guy and being able to take a draft pick that he saw 8 years ago, who was a first round draft pick, and say that O'Hearn guy always had potential. Bring him in here. We'll analytic him up. We'll figure him out. Zach, well, Bradish, obviously, from the deal to say that that's the guy I think that can be a Cy Young candidate. And then Rogers as well in the Stowers thing to say, I understand pitching and I can get better value out of pitching. I don't know Elias at all. I've had half of one conversation with him ever, but I think if I spent more time with him, that part of the pitching thing would be. This is how we find relief pitchers, is we find guys from the Mexican, it's like the major league, the Mexican Penal League. We bring them in, bring in a guy from Hawaii who's been in eight organizations, bring, like Nestor Cortez was his first mission years ago, right? So I mean, he has found these diamonds, and sometimes they escape him, but I think he feels like he can find this kind of talent to give him 9 to 18 pitches in a circumstance to throw strikes. And the latest experiments are what we're seeing, right? A reformed position player that they turn into a pitcher. I mean, it is a little Willy Wonka. It is a little science experimenty, is it not?
I mean, it is. And by the way, you mentioned Nestor Cortez because I know he's your guy. That was actually the last year of the Duquette era. Remember, he
Oh,
was,
okay. That's right. He was a rule
he was
fiver.
very close, and
Okay.
then he
All
was
right.
gone. Right. Yeah. But your point is well
Well,
taken.
Duquette was a genius too in that way. He was.
In certain ways, I
Weird
mean,
freaking dude. Nasty dude, but a genius.
hey, I
Yeah.
mean, it's funny. I was just talking to a friend who, used to work a little bit in media. But he's a big Orioles fan. We were kind of talking about the state of the team. And this was a couple of days ago before they completed the sweep when, I mean, I know you wrote a column criticizing what we've seen early on. I did as well. I mean, I'm not going to sit here and just ignore a sweep in Pittsburgh and some choppy play and waiting for the bats to come alive and all that.
3-6 and getting swept in Pittsburgh's not good enough. They knew that.
But we talked about it from the standpoint of, because you mentioned Duquette. I mean, I think back to where the Orioles were 3 years ago, right? They win 101 games, win the division, home field advantage, right? First round bye, all of that. And even before we got to that Texas series, there was very much a mindset that I think both fans and media had at that point in time of, look at how good they are right now. And this is before quite a few members of that young core are even here yet. Right? Just think how much better they're going to be in a few years. And I pointed out to him, relative to expectations, a lot of the Duquette era holdovers, the Cedric Mullins, Austin Hayes, Santander was a Rule 5 pick, all that, those guys lived up to expectations to a way more impressive degree than what we've seen from basically everyone not named Gunnar Henderson to this point, right? As far as this young core. But to bring it back to the point we were talking about with the bullpen, it's kind of been what they've done. They deviated from that a little bit at the 2024 trade deadline when they obviously picked up Sir Anthony Dominguez. They bring in Gregory Soto. You looked at that bullpen that they had last year at this time. They had more money pumped into it. But I will say, and this is where I'll stick up for Elias a little bit, and I say that as someone, as going back a few years now, one of my biggest criticisms of him and his roster building has been their bullpen. They had a higher priced bullpen at this time a year ago, and it wasn't great. They didn't perform great. So you kind of look at it through the lens
He's been a
of,
mixed bag in that the way DaCosta has been with the wide receivers, where like he's got some Craig Kimbrels in there and he's made some judgment calls on all of those pitchers that they dealt for in the pennant race 2 years. Sir Anthony and that group, the Phillies guys, as I would think of them, that didn't make it the now they didn't hit the ball. I mean, they had all sorts of
sure.
issues and I mean reasons why they would lose and who you want to pin it on. And the manager got fired and they only brought six guys back from the opening day roster and they spent the fortune and they have new ownership and Fredo's gone, but they brought in Steve Martin and Michael Arrighetti and Katie Griggs and they're going to get an all-star game and even just all these the backdrop of Masson and who's paying for it and try they're selling tickets and they got a lot going on new manager but on a night-by-night basis the biggest thing that concerned all of us is the bullpen. It probably will continue to be that because I keep thinking they're going to hit the ball today it's Taylor Ward and Henderson next week it might be Couser and Rutschman or Mayo and Holiday. I don't you better hope it is.
Hope
But
so.
from the pitching standpoint, the starters, we haven't even mentioned Eflin and Tommy John, which is like the worst possible thing. If you would have told me 2 weeks ago on April 10th, I would have thought it was an April Fool's joke. Like, Eflin's already gone, already Tommy John. Good night, goodbye. Second homestand. He's not even on the team. He's not even considered to be on the team. Like, that's a massive blow for my 92 wins because I had him sort of penciled in as being one of the great hopes of this year to make 27 starts and look like a three starter who could. I'm going to give wins and losses. It's going to piss you and Kevin Brown off. So I'm not even going to bother to say he could have been 15-8 and 27 starts and thrown 182 innings. And all of that's blown up, and we haven't even gotten into what the long term part of that is. But I think they're going to hit the ball. I like the starters, and the bullpen continues to remain like they're going to win games when their bullpen can come in a cold day and perform and give them innings. Even the Cade Povich innings were important on Sunday.
I mean, to go back to Eflin for a moment, my apologies to everyone on the WNST tech service. I had a church meeting in the midst of that and missed it. But I think we all
Good
knew.
excuse, accepted.
But when we all knew he was getting a second opinion and he was going to see Dr. Keith Meister in Arlington, the Rangers team doctor who has performed a number of elbow surgeries for the Orioles in recent years, I think we all knew where that was going. And it's a bummer. It happened on his birthday, right? I mean,
Oh.
he had surgery. His birthday was on Wednesday. So it's disappointing. I mean, the silver lining is you weren't looking at Zach Eflin as your opening day starter, as your number one or number two starter or number three starter. He was your number five starter. So you were hoping that that meant a higher floor for your number five starter. And Dean Kramer pitched well in Norfolk on Wednesday. I do think we're going to see Dean Kramer here in the near future, although they are giving Cade Povich a start this weekend. You're hoping Cade Povich, another year older. More experience under his belt, failures under his belt, times where he's looked good under his belt, where he can take a step forward. And you're
Give
going to
me
need.
five innings, kid. Two runs, you know. Get it,
Exactly.
get out of the big jam that you get yourself into, because you're going to get yourself into one, or we're going to kick the ball around to get you into one, which is a whole other. That's a whole other issue too, right? And the Bradish meltdown. You know, they've broken bats over their knees. They've had, you know, the manager's gotten thrown out. They've been swept in Pittsburgh. Like, you know, they've managed a little choppy waters and weathers, and
Sure.
Eflin not being the largest part of it, even with Holiday and Westberg, and you know where they are with the bullpen and depleted. Because Elias would say, hey, you know, to some degree, if all these guys had their arms on, we would be pitching our asses off. And I was buying that in March. You know, I mean, as the depletion happens, we start to count on Cade Povich this weekend. Let's go. I mean, I you know, I'm okay with that. I
I
like the way he
mean,
looked last weekend.
We talked about it with Brandon Young earlier this week. I mean, look, I'm not going to sit here and vouch for the idea that Cade Povich, if he has to make 20 plus starts, that it's going to go as well as it would need to go for a team that eyes contention and playing October
He will
baseball.
very much look like a
But
fifth starter in both of our minds, or a guy who, like
probably,
last year,
but.
didn't belong if you had a real Eflin, if you had spent a money on a Bassett, you know, if a Bradish or a Rogers had emerged and all of that happened. And thank
But
God it happened, because if Cade Povich was their number two starter, they would be a really bad team.
well, I mean, if he was their number two starter, they'd be one of the worst teams in baseball. But
Right.
the point I'm trying to make is you're not going to get through a 162 game schedule with five starters. You're not going to do it with six. Probably not going to do it with seven or eight, right? You're going to need some spot starts mixed in there. You're going to need, you know, whether it's Brandon Young or Cade Povich or Albert Suarez or, you know, as I've told you, there are some arms at AAA right now that aren't necessarily ready to pitch in the majors in April or May, but could become interesting
They
considerations
got
as the
another
year goes
Nestor.
on.
I want to
They
point that
do.
out. They got a Nestor German.
I was safe. Nestor Herman, right? So, but you know, you look at that. You look at how the Dodgers, and I get it. The Dodgers spend more money than anyone, right? And it's often not a good comp, but the comp is they've had to use quite a few starters, right? And put the money part aside, they've also done a good job of developing, right? Their farm system, and they have players internally that they've found as well. So that's why you need a mix, right? It can't just be you buy your pitching. It can't just be solely that you develop your pitching, right? We've talked about it a lot. The Orioles seem to be doing better, and I'm not going to say that they are accomplished at it just yet because those guys need to get to the majors and be able to do the job. But I've told you, going back to last year or two, they have had more of an emphasis than they had in previous drafts of focusing on pitching a little bit more. Now, is it as where everyone wants it to be? No, I'm not going to say that, but it's a recognition of, hey, we can't just draft college bats, college bats, college bats. For one, quite frankly, that strategy hasn't produced reaped a lot of fruit in terms of that being as successful when, you know, Heston Kerstad is, I'm not ready. If he's not a bust already, he's BUS at this point. Colton Cowser is off to another bad start at the plate, right? I mean, so you have to adjust as an organization. Eric DaCosta and the Ravens don't draft in the same exact way that they did. You know, yes, the mantra is best player available, but they've changed their ways in how they
And
draft
about to change
players.
it again with a new head coach, probably wants
Sure.
different things than John Harbaugh
Little
wanted.
bit, yeah, at least a little bit, no question about it. But you look at the Ravens, they've had their ebbs and flows where I can remember the Ravens a decade ago, a little bit more than that, they had a stronger emphasis on small school guys than a lot of teams out there. Look at the Ravens in recent years. They've become much more draft the power, you know, the power five, power four schools type prospects, especially early on, right?
Well, it certainly
So
projects better when you're playing against equal
yeah, I
competition.
mean, and you know, I'm not trying to get too
And in
much
the
into the
era
weeds.
NIL, that's all the cream's risen to some
Sure.
point, right?
But you know, and I'm not saying that to get too much into the weeds. The point is you're evolving, right? You're never staying the same. If you are, you're going to be left behind.
Dude, and I
So
bring Katie Griggs into this and their little 410 promotion this weekend, and we'll be down at Fadley's on Friday. By the way, I want to point that out. Maryland Lottery is sponsoring us. We have the new Maryland Treasures. I have a handful of these Harlem Globetrotters left. We'll be at Fadley's on Friday. I'm wearing my Coco's gear. The 23rd, we're going to be at Coco's, but next Thursday, we're going to be at Costas and Timonium, and then we're going to be at your joint, Pizza John's, on May 1st. I was down. I snuck a cheesesteak about after yoga the other night after I left Planet Fitness. It was Tuesday night, and I'm so. It was really good. I didn't get the fries or the gravy, but I did go to Pizza John's. So we'll be doing that. It's all brought to you by GBMC. We're walking a mile in their shoes next Friday the 17th for safe sexual abuse and prevention and awareness. We're doing that at GBMC. Also, our friends at Farnan and Dermer, who I mispronounced earlier, but did not miss a step in taking care of my plumbing and my flooding issue last Wednesday. And thankfully, my wife's even more thankful. Luke, I get on the Katie Griggs side of this, and I wrote my letter and where their money's coming from and the Truist Suites and Don Rove. I go through all of that, right? But I do think, as it relates to the team and as it relates to Mike Elias's vision of the team, and we could talk about this with football with salary cap. Look, Elias doesn't have a salary cap, but he's got a range. You know, I would think that Rubenstein and Arrigetti are very much counting their pennies because they gave Fredo and the family $1.8 billion, and they're expecting this thing to make money, and they don't know what they're doing with Masson, and you know. But Elias thinks the bullpen is the place where he has the market advantage, right? Of being able to save money. That's the place that they don't want the Sir Anthony expenditures and piecing it all together as it should look and will look. And I guess we've kissed off Gunnar Henderson or any notion that they're going to give him a $500 million or whatever that's going to be, or that time will come. Let's see if the ballpark's full, if they've had a parade around here. There's a lot of things, but the advantage, the Billy Ball, or the Money Ball, Billy Bean Ball, not money. Billy Ball was, I'm thinking Billy Martin. It's because I had Vaccaro on talking Steinbrenner stories last week. But the money ball part of this is Elias squeezing the bullpen, right? We should expect that, right? That's not where he thinks we're going to spend a lot of money. It's going to be buy a Bassett, you know, get a bat, get an off-season acquisition, sign our young guys that we can. Like, and he does think Rule 5e in that way, or I would think that sort of I can get more out of Leody Taveras, or I can find that outfielder that can come in that can give me at bats that are professional. I just feel like he really feels if I spent more time with him, I would think of him as a baseball cheapskate because he kind of came in that way through all the organizations. He's never run a Dodgers or a Yankees. And here, this more fiscally prudent bean counter. I mean, look, man, say what you want about the Angelos people, but they were not industry people at all. They were running a lemonade stand there for 30 years. I mean, like, Katie Griggs went to like Ivy League and Elias, and they think of them. I've met the Whistler. I've met the people around these people and the Hamptons heir and their billionaire. You like I smell that. And I feel that. And I think for Elias with this gig, part of his genius is going to say, I can find better value than spending buying it at market rate for you fellas. I think this is where the advantage would be. And I think that that's the hardest part of operating this, is thinking this is going to become, we say the Cardinals, that it's not the Pirates and it should never be the White Sox, especially in that market where they have people. There are a lot of people in Chicago. They got to figure out how to get them. Cubs ripped them off for years before they got competitive. I feel like they're trying, they're spending money, they're doing things. But for any of us to ever try to explain the bullpen or think that they're going to get proven arms, and maybe they'll do that at the deadline, right? Maybe somehow they can package the Mountcastles and the Cowsers and the pieces that they don't want and get an arm or two that would make you happy, make the pundits happy, make Ken Rosenthal happy, and take on that 10 or $20 million over the last 90 days of the year to try to bring in a second closer, a set, you know, those pieces that are in the last year of a contract that can cost you some of your Nestor Hermans or whatever, whoever it would be. But that's my long way of saying, like, I'm trying to understand now that they are competitive, now that they spend money, now that they buy $150 million players, they have two money bags owners, they have a bean counter in there trying to squeeze every nickel out of the Birdland insiders and trying to wave a magic wand to have more money. Elias would still say, no, we're not going to spend money on that. We're going to grow that from the Mexican League out of the Hawaiian 31-year-old guy that we're given a chance that we made from an infield. Like, that's the Willy Wonka brew I feel like Mike Elias sells to these people. And it's going to have to be that way because I don't, filling that stadium up and thinking this thing's going to pump money out in some way, I don't smell it. I mean, I just don't. And I'm always thinking that this is going to be his market advantage.
I don't know. I mean, I hear what you're saying, but last year, Sir Anthony Dominguez was making $8 million. Gregory Soto was making, I think, I can't remember off the top of my head, but he was making real money. Andrew Kittredge was on a $9 million base salary with a $1 million buyout.
After they
So,
wasted money on Kimbrel the year before too, a
right.
lot of money.
So I don't know if this is like what their bullpen is now really signals anything other than that's just how the 2026 club is constructed. It's
I
really
think he
tough.
might think it's the riskiest money he can spend is in the bullpen.
I think that's sure. I mean, short of like nine-figure contracts, sure. I would agree with that. And I think that the industry would mostly agree with that just based on the volatility you see from year to year. I mean, we always romanticize the Mariano Riveras or the Trevor Hoffmans, but you can find a heck of a lot of relievers out there that even had long, very fruitful careers. And you'll go find someone who pitched for 15 years. And 4 or 5 of those years were absolute clunkers where you say, man, that guy is unusable in high leverage. So
Because he wasn't throwing strikes, and
because
that's
it's just,
usually
it's
part of
very
throwing the ball
volatile.
98 miles an hour, right?
Well, I mean, even before, but even before we got into this, you know, this current age of crazy velocity, I mean, it's just, it's volatile, right? In a simplistic way, relievers are what? Failed starters almost across the board. Now, you'll find some rare exceptions there, but even once upon a time, there were thoughts of Mariano Rivera being a starter, right? So Zach Britton was a starter before he became an
Greg
all-star
Olson
reliever,
at
right?
Auburn.
So that just inherently, there's a little bit of that that goes on, but it's just, it's volatile. It's volatile. And I think how the Orioles are presently constructed, and believe me, I have my concerns about this pen. You know that. You heard me talk about it all winter. I still do, regardless of the fact that, hey, Rico Garcia's done a nice job, and I like what I've seen from Anthony Nunez, other than failing to field a dribbler in Pittsburgh in a game where they should have won and ended up losing. But there's still a lot of there are a lot of question marks in that group. But if you're trying to look at this thing and you have to look at every part of a roster as you're trying to assess, Mike Elias would probably tell you our expectations are that our rotation is going to be better. And we have Trevor Rogers, who is looking exactly like he did a year ago, and has pit looked the part of an ace. He's been a stopper for them, right? I mean, for all the frustration of how they swung the bats on Tuesday, Trevor Rogers did his thing again, right? And gave them
It
another
is
great chance
trending
to
in the
win.
right direction where you'd want it in the early part of April from that aspect, which is why you and I can remain bullish on them when they sweep a series to say they're doing what they need to do to wait for Holiday and wait for Westberg and wait for better weather and and more solid through their rotation, whatever their rotation's going to be, because it just changed dramatically, right?
Well, I'm not ready to say I'm fully, good with where the rotation is, but Rodgers, Bradish looked better on Wednesday afternoon, other than getting ticked off and costing himself a run. And by the way, I don't know if you heard his post-game comments. I mean,
He owned it.
he completely owned it. He said that was childish. That will not happen again. And in defense of Kyle Bradish, I know we haven't watched him pitch a whole lot the last year and a half, but going back to when he was a rookie, going back to 2023, he's not someone who exhibited that kind of immaturity or, losing his mind in the way that, you think how Sidney Ponzone would have meltdowns and, would have a good start until it's not, or even Dean Kramer,
Dean
if you go
Kramer,
back.
I was getting
I
ready
mean,
to say that's been
yeah.
Dean Kramer. It's not his
Yeah.
arm.
So,
It's what happens when adversity comes.
right. So I'm willing to give him. I'm willing to give him the benefit of the doubt on that. We all have our weak moments, right? Even in everyday life, we all have our moments where we say, I shouldn't have done
Well, I
that or I
think about
shouldn't have
these
said that.
guys going through the Tommy John
But
thing and Eflin on his birthday, and I'm thinking like all of these guys have been at the bottom of the pit with ice on their arm and in a lot of
sure.
pain and having to work back. So they throw the ball at 98 miles an hour and some sub, crazy, less than human thing that they do that none of us could ever do. And they do it all day, every day, and ice it down. And then you get out there and things aren't going your way. I mean, no one's had more adversity than that dude. Radish?
I mean, especially when you
Maybe
consider how
Bautista at this point,
Bautista at this point, absolutely. I mean, for him to have major elbow surgery and then less than
Now
2 years.
Eflin, I mean, there's no good stories
Yeah.
here,
Well, I mean,
but
it's
Bradish
pitching.
made his way back and into a bad situation last year, and now this season's off to a start where like they all know they can be good. You know what I mean? I'm not blowing smoke, neither are you, right? They can be a really good team if things, if they play well. They have the potential. Dude, you and I've sat here for many, many years where they just stunk and they had Rio Ruiz and hitting cleanup and, just like not, like literally, no offense. I love Rio Ruiz, but, Mark Reynolds batting a buck 80 and hitting 42 home runs and striking out 240 times. Like I've just seen some real crud ball everything. The owner from ownership all the way through. Like, I don't feel that way about this pack at all. And I'm gonna hold him to a higher standard because Albert is supposed to be a genius. And they did have 1.5 pretty damn good major league starters, as I saw it, to say, like, all right, I'll take mine and play yours. But the hall of potential for the Rutschmans and the Cowsers and all the draft picks, they're striking out too much. They're situationally not like I am worried more about that part of the operation now that we're 2 years into this.
Well, I mean, some of these guys have struggled for a long time now. I mean, look, I'm way more apt to give Samuel Basayo, who's 21 years old, and even Dylan Beavers, who, has swung the bat better than some of the other guys, but we've seen him have his lapses defensively. Those guys are still rookies, right? Colton Cowser's 26. I mean, Adley Rutschman's 28. I mean, the idea that we're going to use Young with Adley Rutschman at this point in time. And look, Adley's gotten off to a better start with the bat this year. So I've been encouraged by that. But I'm also not going to say, well, he's back and there's nothing to worry about 2 weeks into the
Yeah, I mean,
season
him
after
being
a year and a half.
adequate is just so disappointing in
Sure. Well,
some sort of
especially
Matt Wieters way,
at this point, I'd take Matt
A
Wieters. I
hundred
mean,
percent.
based on that. It's
A
so
hundred
funny because
percent.
I can remember talking to you back in 2023, and I said this at this point, and I'll own it. What we Adley Rutschman 2 years, 2 calendar years into his major league career was better than Matt Wieters ever was. But the Adley Rutschman we've seen since then is worse than Matt Wieters was at as when he was a starting player, not talking about like when he went off to the Cardinals and he was a backup for the Nationals for 5 minutes. But to go back to, what we're talking about here with this offense, I mean, what was encouraging about this series, and there wasn't a whole lot to be impressed about other than, the pitching. They pitched well enough. They got a good start from Rodgers. Bradish was better. I think Bradish, a big thing for him, first pitch strikes, that rate has been down for him so far in 2026 compared to what we saw, not just last year in his limited sample in return, but previously in his career. So, he's fighting the command a little bit. I don't think the stuff He hasn't carried his stuff as well when we're talking getting deeper into the games, but it's been cold. It hasn't been conducive. He's not pitching in 75, 80 degree weather, which he will be in the not too distant future. So that part of it, I'm not as concerned about, but he needs to be better, and he'd be the first to tell you that. Boz has pitched well, save for one inning, right? I mean, Boz has pitched pretty darn well, save for his second inning in his debut start. So I want to see, I not, I want to, they need to see a better version of Chris Bassitt. I mean, Chris Bassitt has another start or two like he's had. He's going to be in the bullpen, or should be, because that's how bad it's been. And we're going to see the fifth. Povich is going to get a start on Sunday. Whether it's going to be him and they give Kramer a little more time at Norfolk, or Kramer, who pitched well for the Tides in his last time out, we see him later on in the homestand. I would lean that way just because of who Dean Kramer is. But you want to see more consistency there. And to go back, because we're kind of talking in circles about the bullpen, but they need their starters to be more consistent. If their starters are more consistent, that eases some of the pressure and the workload on the bullpen. It's all related, right? If their offense is better, they're not playing in 4-2 games. They're playing in 8-3 games, right? My joke going back a couple years ago, they need a
Need more
few more
blowouts.
blowouts. You know what I mean? But then it's all, we tend to do this thing, and we do this in every sport, because we do the same thing with the Ravens talking about defense, offense, or special teams. It's all related, right? The better you are in one area, a little less is needed from some of the other areas. And if you're really good in all the areas, that's the makings of a great team. So you look at where the Orioles have been right now, and my overall assessment isn't terribly different than it was coming out of the Pittsburgh game. I haven't been terribly impressed with what I've seen across the board, save for a few individuals, but those few individuals doing what they did, meaning what Taylor Ward did on Wednesday afternoon, having three doubles. I mean, he had a bad first series. He had a bad start to the first homestand. He's been really good since then. I mean, he has swung the bat exceptionally well. He hasn't hit home runs, but like I said, I mean, he has nine doubles already. I mean, go look at the Orioles' total number of doubles. He's accounted for, they have 23 doubles total. He has nine of them. Gunnar Henderson has four home runs. The Orioles have eight total. So it really speaks to how little anyone else has slugged except those two guys. But you can get through a three-game series with a couple guys hitting, right? If they're hitting at a high level. In the long run, yeah. Of course, they're going to need way more from Pete Alonso. I mean, if Pete Alonso doesn't hit, they have way bigger problems than anything we're talking about right now. I'm going to work under the assumption that Pete Alonso will start hitting, right? So, but when you're talking about Kowser and Coby Mayo and kind of going down the list of those guys, Basayo, I mean, you're talking about guys who haven't done it at this level yet. I mean, Kowser, when he did it at his best 2 years ago at this point in time, Kowser knows the book is out on him 100% unequivocally. Don't throw him a fastball. Throw him changeups and breaking balls. He can't hit them. I mean, he just can't. Until he proves otherwise, I don't know why you would throw him a fastball. I mean, it's just the truth. He understands that, but it's amounted to he. I will say this: he's not striking out at quite as high of a rate as last year, but he's not hitting for any power either. I mean, it's one thing, and you mentioned strikeouts a lot. What do I always tell you? I can live with the strikeouts if what? It's accompanied by slug. They're not slugging right now. It's save for a couple guys. So, Gunnar struck out quite a bit. I mean, Gunnar has 17 strikeouts and 49 plate appearances. That's a lot, but he's also homered four times and he's doubled three times, and he's drawn some walks as well. So the profile of striking out a lot, Kyle Schwarber strikes out is, go look at his strikeout numbers on a daily or annual basis for the Phillies. Kyle Schwarber also can hit 50 home runs, and he's also going to walk 100 plus times and do all kinds of other things that allow you to live with that part of his game. So far with some of these Orioles, I mean, it's, you're seeing a lot of strikeouts and you're not seeing much pop, which again, cold in Chicago, not like it was 90
Dude,
degrees
I
in
told John
Pittsburgh.
Martin he's got to start giving some more money away. They got, I mean, it's ridiculous.
So, but All that being said, they pitched well enough. And the thing I really liked, and we really saw this on Tuesday big time, Gunnar hits the big home run. They got it done, right? You're not going to play your absolute best for 162 games. You're going to go through periods of time where you're not hitting. You're going to go through periods of time where you don't pitch as well. You're going to go through periods of time when your bullpen is completely spent because they've had to work a lot. You're going to go through time a time or two through your rotation where no one pitches all that well. So
Oh,
you
this
have all
team's definitely going to go through some hitting slumps and
yeah, and
LOBs and Ks because, like, they're built for it. And I can't expect a wolf's a wolf, man. You know what I
yeah,
mean? Like, strike
well,
out, you strike out.
and the other part, and this is the part of the game where we haven't talked about it a lot in this conversation, but we've talked about it plenty in general. They're not great defensively. They're not good defensively. They don't really have too many guys that profile as average defensively. I like what I've seen from Blake. No, I'm it's the truth though. I
Dude,
like
I
what
cut that up. That's comedy. I mean, really, that
they
is.
don't. They don't. I mean, who? Gunnar Henderson is at times can play a good
To your
shortstop.
point, when they hit the ball at somebody, it's an adventure for all of us
It
in a general
absolutely
sense.
can be. I mean, their outfield defense needs to be better. I mean, that's been really bad. Their infield defense, I think Gunnar Henderson from where he was a couple years ago is playing a better shortstop. I don't, generally speaking, I don't have any concerns when the ball is hit to Gunnar. I think Blaze
He's not a
Alexander.
liability, I'll
Yeah,
give him that.
exactly. I'm not saying he's going to become a gold glove
And
shortstop, but
again, he's going to hit 34 home runs, so.
exactly. I like what I've seen from Blaze Alexander defensively. Pete Alonso, generally speaking, I mean, that's kind of been the best part of his game so far, which is damning him with praise until he starts swinging the bat better. But their outfield defense has left a lot to be desired. I mean, we talked a lot about where Couser was in terms of being a center fielder. I mean, it's across the board. I mean, we've seen everyone make misplays out there, miscues out there. And we're not just talking about, taking a bad path to the ball or, dropping a, it's also been the throw into the wrong base. It's been that sloppiness. So that's an area
Except for
where,
my dad would say, get your head in the game.
well, and that's, if you're trying to assess this team across the board, that's something that gives you some worry because inevitably you're going to have periods of time where you don't pitch as well or hit as well. But what ha the good teams, their defense will pick them up. I'm not sure how often this team's defense is going to
Well, that's where the
pick it
Bradish
up. That's,
meltdown was sort of like, come on,
oh
man.
yeah, I
You
mean,
know,
like it
Albarn
was
has in the dugout
inexcusable.
the other day. It's sort of like, come on, man. I
Well,
mean,
I
let's
mean,
play like grown-ups here, you know?
I don't mind a manager getting thrown out. I
But the era of the Manny Machado acting like a clown, like in the we, you know, the
well,
Armando Benitezes and the issues we've had around
no,
here.
but
Hi,
we're
you've
also.
mentioned Sidney Ponson. I don't want to see any of that in the modern Orioles under Craig Albernaz. You know, I just don't.
Okay. I mean, I don't disagree, but I mean, the manager, I don't know where I put a manager ejection in there. I mean, we're talking about the same franchise that Earl Weaver's in the Hall of Fame, right? And Earl got kicked out as much as anyone,
I love the
more than anyone.
theatrics of all of it.
Yeah. So, but there's also something to be said of, that's an early season moment of you're sticking up for your guys. A couple of your guys weren't happy with how the opposition was. The perception of a quick pitch or whatever. Hey, they've won every game since he was ejected in that Sunday loss. I don't know. I'm not saying it's because of that. Point is, sometimes you respond to something like that. Don't make a habit of it. I'm not saying go get kicked out once every other series, but I think you understand where I'm coming from. They need to be better. There's no doubt, but they got a sweep in Chicago. They got themselves back to 500. That's good enough for second place in this division going into the off day, and understanding that there aren't many teams across the American League that are playing great baseball right now. They're 6-6, and Pete Alonso is hitting 188, and Colton Cowser is hitting 182, and Kobe Mayo is hitting 133, and Ryan Mountcastle's hitting 250, but hitting for no power. Tyler
Westberg's
Rose.
hitting zero. Holiday's hitting
Holidays,
zero.
Holiday. I said to you, I'm looking for a Holiday at some point on this homestand. If he's not back at some point on this homestand, I'm kind of asking like, what's taking so long with him at Norfolk? He's getting at bats. I get it. This is his spring training. I understand that notion, but at some point, you want him back because let's face it, I mentioned I like what I've seen from Blaze Alexander, and he's, he hasn't hit for a lot of power, but he swung the bat. He's hitting 276. He's played good defense. But I mean, Kobe Mayo, we talk so much about his defense. He's not hitting at all. I mean, he's 133. He has slugging 167. When he's making contact, he's not hitting for any authority. He had a bad challenge at the plate a couple days ago, cost them a challenge, and to the point where.
Well, get back into the heads up part of the game and the ball. Like,
So,
I don't.
well, I mean, that to me is a product of someone pressing, right? I mean, I think a young hitter that challenges at a pitch and in a situation where you really don't want him to, that's a guy that's pressing, that's he's feeling it. And it doesn't mean I'm saying he's going back to the minors at this point in time, but he needs to start hitting. Well, because
133 you've earned going back to the minors.
I mean, 130, look, it's
We're
that.
2 weeks into the season. I'm not,
It's
and
36. It's 36 plate appearances, but
ideally
like,
Holiday would be playing every day.
well, and if Holiday's playing second base, then you have options at third, not just Mayo, but Blaze Alexander. Whoever goes, I mean, and it could be Jeremiah Jackson, but point is, you've got some different options there that you can look at it. When Holiday's back, you're not in a position where you're inclined to keep waiting on Kobe Mayo if he's not going to swing the bat, right? I mean, that's just the reality. So, but. They have veterans that need to start swinging the bat better. I mean, there's no doubt about that. I mean, it's really been two guys who have swung the bat at an exceptional level, Taylor Ward and Gunnar Henderson. Everyone else has been at best okay. Adley Rutschman's been okay. Adley's walked and he's not striking out as much and has had really good at bats, but he also, still hasn't hit a home run. I mean, they have 8 home runs in 12 games. I mean, that's not really what you
John
had in
Martin's getting
mind.
rich over to Maryland Lottery. I'm
Yeah.
telling you, Luke.
Yeah. So,
Well,
and
look, man,
again,
Giants in town, right? And John Miller's in town, so that's always good. We're having crab cakes. That's good. We're going to talk football. Ravens are changing jerseys next
I
week,
know,
right?
right? You and I haven't even gotten into that. I mean, I have my thoughts and my, honestly, some anxieties about it if I'm, going to lean into my fashion tweets, nerd them, but it'll definitely be
I have
interesting,
Todd
but.
Radom coming on next Friday, so we're all into this. I'm doing a whole bunch of Canadian rock stars. I've had the guys from April Wine and a Honeymoon Suite on. I think Gil Moore from Triumph's coming on. They're opening their tour this weekend, so I'm doing some rock and roll. Got a guy named Luke Dosett. Have I told you this story, Luke?
No, I don't think
All right,
so.
so I went to South America. I haven't talked to you about this on or off the air much, but then we did a couple segments. I think I did a segment with you in Machu Picchu and one in Montevideo, but. I saw Bryan Adams 3 times in South America. Was it the reason I went to Montevideo? No, but it was like a reason to go. And AC/DC I saw in Santiago when Bryan Adams was there. By the way, Lollapalooza was in my hotel. Tom Morello, like it was a big deal. The music's a big deal down there. Rock and Rio is going on if you follow Eddie Trunk or any of the classic rock people. So I go to see Bryan Adams in Montevideo, and I got very lucky. A man named Nestor and his wife Elaine and their daughter Sonia had a ticket, and I went and I sort of sat in for the brother and got to know this family and spoke as much Spanish as I could, as much English as they could, and their young daughter spoke English. So, band comes on, and I'm like, "Who's guitar player?" Like Keith Scott is famously this demonstrative. Swinging the guitar, doing crazy stuff. He's been Bryan Adams' guitar player for 40 years. I'm like, who's that dude? And I looked up, like I went right to Google on my phone. I'm in the arena and I'm checking it out. I'm like, Luke Dosett. This guy plays with Sarah McLachlan. He has his own band, big band, Juno winning band in Canada. He's Canadian. People know who he is in Canada. And apparently, and I learned this later, Keith Scott had a physical issue. They had a tour in South America with 20 dates or whatever. It started in Puerto Rico and it went Brazil. I saw a show in Montevideo. I saw a show in Chile. I saw a show in Bogota, Colombia. Nice place for a night, but I can't recommend it. But nonetheless, people said, "Were you scared on this trip?" I'm like, "Hell yeah!" I mean, I was running around South America. It's like a freaking Rolling Stones song. So, Bryan Adams had a different guitar player. It was this guy. And I looked him up and he showed up, I guess because Rush did the thing at the Junos a couple weeks ago. And I know you have WrestleMania coming up. So we all have our high holy holidays. But the Junos showed up and Rush showed up And everything about Rush in my life showed up with when they played. They did a surprise gig 2 Sundays ago. And then after that, the algorithm knows I was in South America with Brian Adams and Luke Dosett and, all of that. And I started seeing pieces from him doing media on the red carpet at the Junos. And I'm like, hey, that's a dude from Brian Adams. He's a little goatee thing going on. And I had looked him up. And he said that Brian Adams basically called him and said, can you learn 28 of my songs, meet me in Puerto Rico in 3 days and do a tour with me? So he had to learn 28 Brian Adams songs in 3 days and show up in Puerto Rico. And I noticed when I was watching him in Santiago, Chile, I had a really good seat right above him in this arena. And I mean, literally, he was right beneath me. It almost felt like a Ramsey gig for me, And I'm watching him and he's just staring at his guitar and he didn't look at Brian Adams. He said on the red carpet that he's such a crazy Brian Adams fan and he couldn't let on what a fanboy he was. He said, because if I looked up and I realized where I am and who I'm doing this with, I might just break down and cry. And he's like, so I couldn't even look at him. So I'm like, I got to get this guy on the show. So I wrote a note. He's coming on the show. So I'm doing Canadian rock stars this week. I'm doing Fadley's this week. We're doing the Maryland Crab Cake Tour next week. We're going to be at Costas on Thursday, the 16th. We're going to be at Coco's on the 23rd, looking forward to that, of course. And May 1st, back at Pizza John's in Essex. It's all brought to you by Farnan and Dermer, our friends at GBMC and the Maryland Lottery. I'll have fresh Maryland treasures. So you're not the only Luke I'm having on this week, all right?
There we go. Sounds good.
You're all geeked up about the draft, aren't you? You're ready for this? You're ready for all this?
I'm ready for it. I mean, we'll talk a lot about the Ravens. I mean, I still O-line, some other areas, but we're getting there. I mean, Lamar Jackson's back in the building. Players are back in the
Got a new
building.
coach.
I mean, it's
Got a new
it
pass rusher.
it starts to feel a little more real at this point in time now, where we're going to see players out on the field and you're going to
You and I
see
are going to be talking about it
a
twice a
different
week.
head coach out on the field. I mean, that.
More than twice a week over the next couple of weeks, for sure.
Oh, yeah. No doubt.
All right. Don't believe any of the rumors out there. If you get the WNST text service, they really might have dealt for Max Crosby or something like that. And here's the fruit of all of this is they get to pick 14th. So for all of you out there on the Max Crosby train or not, or who said what, by the way, I had Lee Steinberg on. I had Gary Davenport on from Bleacher Report. So we've been having a lot of fun around here, not sticking to sports, sticking around sports, and certainly writing about the Orioles and talking about the Orioles on a daily basis. He's Luke. I'm Nestor. We are WNSD, AM 1570 Towson, Baltimore. We never stop talking Baltimore positive.